Corky Koyman is with us now. He is from Denker Capital. Good to have you with us, Corky.
Oh, good morning,
and,
Alex.
And thanks for the little photo bombing earlier. I was delighted to see that you're with us, but none of your issue. It's a big day for investments, a big day for financial services stocks, the area that you are the expert on and our go-to guy. Can we start with America? How did the financial shares react to the Trump victory?
Well, I suppose the word to use is exploded. The regional banks and some of the most of the investment banks gained 11%. The range was between 8% to 14%. I think Goldman Sachs was up the most, 13%. J.P. Morgan up 13%. Bank of America up 9%. So the range is between 8 and 13%. And bear in mind, I just look now at something like most regional banks are already up 60 to 70%, while including this year to date or for the 12 months. So we've already had quite a good move. But on top of this, you now got 14%, 13% in one day. So what triggered this? Well, obviously the Trump election and victory. But It's the policies that the market is anticipating that he might push through. And so we're talking specifically tariff protection against exports, in other words, America first. But a tariff protection is inflationary. So if you load imports with tariffs, it means your consumers have to pay more for the products. So that's inflationary. So you see your long bond yield has jumped to 4.4%. Now, a few months ago, it was 3.7. That's a 70 basis point rise in 10-year interest rates in America, anticipating higher inflation. But the important thing for banks as well is that Trump is very anti-regulation, less protection, and the market anticipates that he will reverse some of the protection, some of the regulation to make doing business easier, to facilitate business, and specifically on the banks, the threat was, well, it actually was happening, the process was that banks were going to be loaded with higher Basel III capital requirements. Fortunately, that has not been finalized yet, and so the anticipation is that's an easy win for Trump. He can immediately say, just cancel that whole project. So it's not regulation has to be reversed in this case. In this case, it just says cancel it. And so the threat was hanging over the banks that they're going to have to deal with more capital requirements, and that's been removed, and hence the big. The other one, obviously, is very America first, and less regulations means more growth. Just by the way, a quick interesting stat, the European Union gross domestic product, you know, the size of the economy and the U.S. economy were almost the same at the end of 2008. U.S. is now 70% bigger in terms of its GDP than Europe. And that is how many years later? That is 16 years later. But over the 16 years, U.S. has grown 70% more than Europe. And the answer is really regulation. Europe has tried to regulate, protect everybody, look after everybody. And that's what this election was about. Trump wants to grow. Democrats wanted to protect people, give handouts, which is, you've got to look after the poor. But okay, back to the banks. So the banks have had a good rally. So the question now is, obviously this is anticipation of what he could do. If, let's say, he comes with policies that he actually reverses some of the legislation, you could have a further run. Yeah, because obviously that increases profitability more. If there's huge backlash and he can't push through what he wants to push through, then the movement's been a bit of an overreaction. But in essence, I'm sure Jamie Dimon and his colleagues clinked a few glasses of champagne last night, because we've entered an era which will be better for banks than under a Harris election victory.
You mentioned Jamie Dimon. He was being tipped as the Treasury Secretary for Harris, and he even said he was up for the job for Harris. Presumably, he's not going to get that job with Trump.
No, that will now go to the boyke from Pretoria, Elon Musk. No, by the way, Elon has done wonderfully well in getting him into a position. And if you're a capitalist and you have your president influenced by a guy like Elon, you know, then that's good for growth. Jamie Dimon, in that regard, I'm just not sure. I think the divide between his thinking and Trump's thinking. But Jamie Dimon is pragmatic, and if Trump was to ask him, "Do you want to come and play a role?" I mean, it'd be stupid to say no, because as a very experienced, the most experienced bank CEO, he could have a huge influence and temper Trump and steer the direction. But it could be that he decides, "Listen, the guy isn't going to listen to me. I can't handle the individual that he."
Well, when we spoke ahead of the election to Anthony Ginsberg of Gins Global, he was saying that he was hoping that Trump would win so that it could release a number of acquisitions that had been were on the cards or on the table, but are being blocked by the mergers and acquisitions SAR, for want of a better word, the antitrust people in Washington. With the banks, is it something similar? Are there mergers and acquisitions that were on the table, but that the Democrat-appointed boss of saying whether you can the thumbs up or thumbs down was actually stopping them?
Yeah. So one of the strongest price moves yesterday was Capital One, Bank Capital One. It's actually headquartered in Washington. It went up 15%, and that is because Discover, a credit card company in the U.S., a large one, had made a bid for Capital One, and that was being blocked. And so obviously now the thinking of the market is with the Trump administration that will be removed and they will get to go ahead. So Discover jumped 15% on the increased possibility that they will be bought out. And you'll find more of that of the regional banks as well. There are just still too many banks in the U.S., and a lot of the mergers that were logical were blocked until, as you remember, when we had the whole Silicon Valley issue where then the banks that were in trouble were allowed to be bought out. But for the rest, the regulators were blocking it because of Democrat pressure that this is, in the end, it gives more power. In the end, it possibly labor loses jobs. And, they were very anti things that would be pro-capital and stimulate growth.
It really, at the core of what the Americans have done, from reading what you're saying, is they have chosen to move away from this process of protecting people or protection to one where the individual must now look after themselves. Is that a little harsh?
I think if you're in the simplest form, you've described it perfectly. It is actually taking protection away or being less protectionist. And there are people who will get hurt. At the end of 2008, the guy said, we can put a robot on every street lights, on every street corner, but you'll slow down the traffic. That's not practical. So people have got to drive and stop when there's a stop street and not expect the people from the other side not to cross. So the Democrats were trying to just protect, overprotect. And you can see that in Europe, where the growth rate remains so low because there is just so much red tape to get business done. And I think it's a huge lesson for South Africa as well that, and we have got parts of society that need protection, need help. But you must actually let the private sector do more of that, and then rather curb the private sector that your monopolistic situations don't become too strong or they can't use that power.
So curb the excesses, but allow freedom, allow people to, I suppose, or businesses to express themselves. We in our country have been performing a lot worse than the American economy. We only 0.35% now of global GDP, which is pretty much nothing. Is there any sign that South Africa will be turning around? Certainly we have the GNU, the Government of National Unity, and you check the numbers very carefully from the South African banks on credit extension, etc. Are there any green shoots?
There are a lot of green shoots, and you can see the market has been reacting to that. But the main risk, well, the green shoots we can already see in transit, in Portnet, in even Eskom. The fact that we haven't had load shedding, people have forgotten what load shedding was. The visa application process. But I think the biggest risk, just talking this week again to a lot of the role players and people very involved, is unfortunately the system in which we operate is still highly corrupt, and incentives drive that corruption. And so unless you really have a massive, I would say number one effort must be to bring back control in that regard and adequate quality people who can exercise control, who can ensure that when you put out a tender, that the tender does go to the best tender application. So that is the biggest risk. The murders we've recently seen, the gang murders in George and here in Cape Town, it testifies to the fact that there's an infiltrated mafia who actually plays a large role in South Africa, and we cannot allow that to take over in South Africa. So that's the dark side, and it is still there, and everywhere I hear people are saying it's going to be very difficult control. It's up to the president to actually give the hawks and the police the powers to really curb the dark side of South Africa that could retard us.
We had a horrific story yesterday where Chris Steyn interviewed a member, one of only two MPs from the Coloured Congress Party, who went along to a jail and met with a policeman who had been incarcerated for 4.5 years because he refused an order from one of these CADA deployed generals to go and arrest a mayor. And he said, that's not my job to arrest people without trial. And so he was the one thrown into jail. And what amazes me is nothing's happened. He's still in jail today, this morning. And I've heard, and he's the politicians on the police portfolio committee. So he's busy, no doubt, stirring things up there. But we do have a new police minister who has a good record in water. It just seems perhaps that the task is so huge that even a most obvious sore thumb like this person who's sitting in jail unfairly is not even being addressed.
Yeah. So you're totally right. The new minister of police has made a huge change. You can see the number of arrests, even the number of shootings where criminals get arrested and shot when they flee. So the incidence of positive cases has increased dramatically, but the system still needs a revamp. It's almost like taking over. Think of Manchester United, the new coach. He's inherited those players. Okay, now he's got to start changing the squad. And I'm not sure that our president, wants to change the squad, because the squad has got their hands in the till and don't want to let go enough. And so that's really, but you're totally right. The initial changes were very good. The real thing is we need to build on that momentum, and the president's got to, this is his chance to really step in and remove the bad apples and have them prosecuted and allow for better people to come in.
Corky, you're always very measured, so to hear you talking like this is a little surprising for me. Is this the feedback that you're getting from people in the international community and indeed from big business in South Africa?
It's actually both. I've had a few discussions actually yesterday and the day before, and I don't want to reveal the names, that actually just I'm by nature optimistic, and I've actually been very positive, and it's worked so far in terms of the direction we've taken. But the warnings were just, don't get too optimistic. There is a huge legacy that has to be broken down. And the case that you referred to is a classical one that you hear so much, that people who want to do well in the civil service just don't get promoted. If you're a policeman who wants to go and arrest a gangster, but your sergeant or your captain above you is also in on the pay, then you get sidelined. You don't get promotion. So you want that whole system to, back to my Manchester United example, you want the coach to get players who want to go and attack, who want to play. At the moment, we got people in a lot of the agencies who don't want to play, who rather want to protect the criminals. It's actually, yeah, this is the most negative you've seen me for a while, but that is just what I've been hearing the last few days, that the moves have been good, but there's a lot more that needs to be done. So your question is, are we going to grow faster? We need a lot more to be done. And make no mistake, the changes that have been made and that will still follow will obviously create growth. It will create more pressure to do the right things. But we've got to pursue that. And in terms of the international community, we can see more and more that foreign businessmen and bankers are coming here to look at the situation, to decide whether to invest capital. And if we go back all the way to post-P.W. Botha's Rubicon speech, when we had the FinRand and the ComRand because money was leaving the country, what really turned us then is, you know, when F.W. de Klerk started the change and capital came back. And a country needs capital to grow, and specifically South Africa. We've been capital starved. So it's very important that we say to these the foreign bankers, come and invest with us. This is what we're doing, and show them what we're doing. But they was, at the moment, they're still saying we want to see the policies come through. We want to see evidence.
Kokkie Kooyman with Denker Capital giving us some very useful insights there on exactly where South Africa stands in the world.